This week on the IoT podcast.
Silicon Labs, we're a semiconductor manufacturer. Over about the last decade or so, we've dedicated ourselves to building products, both hardware and software for the Internet of Things. We talked a little bit about lighting, like metering. That killer use case, in my mind, that drove adoption was billing more. You can not have to roll the truck, as they call it. You could do that automatically. Once you've made it smart, finding all these other services you can do on top of it. And that really takes that return on investment and kind of supercharges it in a lot of these applications.
It then opens up a spider's web of other use cases that come from that. And I think that's the crucial thing that people misunderstand sometimes about IoT, is it is simply the plumbing to enable other services and other benefits to come from it.
IoT is a term that's become so broad, it's almost meaningless. I mean, you could say anything is IoT. When I think about it, where we focus is really on these smart connected edge devices. And there's a lot of unique challenges when you look at those devices.
The killer use case, as the phrase you used earlier, but actually, yeah. What can you unlock from doing it? Can I make money from it? And will someone want it?
Welcome back to the IoT podcast. I'm your host, Tom White. Every week, we are joined by the biggest names in IoT to unravel the trends, misconceptions, and predictions for the Internet of Things. Before we get into today's episode, don't forget to subscribe on whichever platform you're watching or listening on, and turn on that notification bell so you're never out of the loop.
Imagine a world where your city adjusts traffic lights based on real-time flow. Your office building automatically optimizes energy use, and utilities detect leaks before they even become a disaster. And all of this is becoming possible now. Today on the show, I'm joined by Ross Sobolczyk, Senior Vice President of Industrial and Commercial Internet of Things at Silicon Labs. We're going to explore the expanding universe of industrial IoT beyond just factory automation. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to the IoT podcast show. It's been such a long time actually since I've said that. I've almost forgotten where I am and who I am. But thankfully, Ross today is joining me from Silicon Labs. Ross, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And you're very welcome. I've been really looking forward to this, actually. So I know quite a little bit about Silicon Labs, or Silabs, as some people call it. But actually, right. some of our viewers may not know actually what the business is and what it does. So I guess it's a good place to start as ever. Could you explain a little bit about you and the business and what it is you do?
Sure. Happy to, Tom. So Silicon Labs, we're a semiconductor manufacturer. So we design and build products for the Internet of Things. And we've been around since 1999. We were founded here, 1996, actually. We were founded here in Austin, Texas. And over about the last decade or so, we've dedicated ourselves to building products, both hardware and software, for the Internet of Things. So that's our primary focus. That's all we really do, is build wireless connectivity solutions for the IoT. The company is split into two halves. There's a consumer-facing business, which we call our home and life business. And then I run our professional and industrial business, which we call industrial and commercial. So it's each business is about half of the company. And we're roughly about $1 billion in revenue last year.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thank you for the overview. I think a lot of people that I know probably already know Silicon Labs and have either worked with Silicon Labs or have heard them through kind of the IoT grapevine. Really good reputation, actually, in the market. Very good at what you do in terms of the people that you have within the business and the products and services that you create. You touched on it just then, Ross, and this is going to kind of take a flavor for the show that we have today around your particular part around industrial, right? And actually what that means. And this will be really interesting to get into it, because previously when we've had people talk about IoT or Industry 4.0, typically we always focus on factory automation. And of course, that's quite a large part of what it is. And there's many, many use cases. But critically, it's a lot more far-reaching from that. And maybe you can explain a little bit about what we mean by that, Ross.
Sure. Yeah. So the way what we we have a couple of different major segments that we've rolled up into this industrial and commercial business. And we have a true, what we call industrial business, which is what you would traditionally think of as, you know, like, you know, the industry 4.0 type initiatives. So factory automation, controlling machines and manufacturing cells. So that's one portion of our business is true industrial. We also have two other segments. One is smart cities and the other we call commercial and retail. And if you look at all of these segments, they're really focused on large scale problems that are being either confronted by businesses or municipalities that are driving the use cases. So in that smart cities use case, one of the most important applications is around the delivery of utilities. So that could be electricity, water, or gas. And so there's been a major push over the last decade to make those systems become more automated and smart. So for example, with electric meters, you can do customer billing without someone having to go out and read a mechanical meter. With water meters, you can do things like, again, billing, but also doing leak detection and things like that. And with gas meters, similar type of use cases, but even the ability to shut off the meter if there were some sort of like, you know, natural disaster. So smart cities encompasses a lot of these utilities, but other applications as well, like street lighting or, you know, traffic flow and things like that. Our retail and commercial is also a really exciting segment for me in that we're doing applications that would go into like large retail establishments, commercial buildings and things like that. There's a few big applications there. One of them in particular is electronic shelf labels. So if you think of going to a shop and prices being marked with kind of paper tags on the shelf, you know, the more modern IoT approach is those tags become now smart devices. So you can display pricing, you can update that in real time without someone having to manually go do it. And then you can offer other services on top of that as well. And beyond kind of that electronic shelf label, there are other applications that are driven in that commercial space. So for example, if you think of lighting, commercial lighting, there's been a big push to transition lighting to be both LED based, but also smart and controllable. So if you build a lighting system in a building, for example, you can get some energy savings by the fact you move to LED lighting. You could get additional energy savings if you made those lights smart, where you can do building automation to turn the lights off when someone's not in the building, to be able to adjust the brightness depending on what the ambient conditions are, things like that. So those are kind of the three big segments that we break the market up into in this I&C space.
Yeah, that's a fantastic overview. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think that's really insightful for a lot of our viewers and listeners, actually, because there's so many different use cases around a factory and actually the advancements that you make there. But as you said, there's lots of different areas and lots of different use cases where this is actually quite critical. And we actually sort of joked backstage a little bit about our PIR sensor in my podcast room and why I need to do a big wave to keep the light on at certain points. But actually, you know, we can fix that with IoT and we can fix that with occupancy sensors and different sensors for different cases. Primarily, one of the things that I see a lot about why this is useful, and maybe you can expand on this a little bit more, is the fact that if you have a sensor, you don't physically need to go to the location in order to check the problem with the individual device or the setting. Is that the main benefit, or, you know, that people tend to use this for, if we look at maybe the utility aspect? And what would be the other benefits that where this comes in, Ross?
Yeah, Tom, I think it's a really important question. And when I think about these professional systems, what I've seen in my career is there will be, I'll call it the killer use case or the killer ROI that you would look at with the system. So for example, we gave that lighting use case earlier of you maybe are installing your lights to make them LED to save energy. You maybe want to be able to control them wirelessly to have, you know, even more energy savings or start to get some of the benefits in terms of, you know, controlling your environment more actively. But what I'll see in all these systems is that there that would be the killer use case that kind of gets the system installed. But if you think of lighting, once you build a wireless lighting system that covers an entire building, you now have these sensors or these smart devices over top of this entire space. And what we'll see is customers will then say, hey, I built out this application to control the lights, but are there other services or other insights I can gather by virtue of having that system? So one of the insights could be with a lighting system, for example, hey, which rooms are actually used in my building? So if you have sensors that are saying, turning the lights on when people occupy space, you also know when people are occupying that space. So if you're, for example, managing a commercial building, you could look at it and say, I've got a lot of conference rooms on this floor, but really only about 30% of the conference rooms are utilized. Maybe I repurpose that space, or maybe we look at leasing out that space. So you'll get these other insights once you build the system out. So you talked about sort of sensing. Sensing is an important component of it. There's also a control component that can be there. So as the example you gave with the occupancy sensor or the PIR, the motion sensor, right? You're trying to determine that somebody's in the room and do something, not just say somebody's in the room. So that control component also is important for IoT. But when I look at all those segments, we talked a little bit about lighting, like metering. That killer use case in my mind that drove adoption was billing. So if you think of an old mechanical meter, you had to actually have somebody go out to the premise and read the value of the meter for every meter that you had. So the kind of killer value prop there was, hey, you can not need to do that anymore. You can not have to roll the truck, as they call it. You could do that automatically. But then what utilities started to understand is, wow, I have a smart device that is attached to every home that I'm servicing. What else can I do with that device? So now there's a big push around, for example, doing a monitoring of the grid. So if you're trying to understand, like a portion of the electric grid is being stressed and maybe the voltage is starting to droop, or there's a brownout, or the power has gone out, now you can use these meters as smart sensors and billing devices. So that's another example of kind of taking a killer initial use case, and once you've made it smart, finding all these other services you can do on top of it. And that really takes that return on investment and kind of supercharges it in a lot of these applications.
Yeah, I mean, that's so... I'm almost lost for words, actually, because I think you're right. But it is. It's mesmerizing in a way, because you think of one use case as to why this is important, but right, actually, it then opens up a spider's web of other use cases that come from that. And I love the example of the occupancy, and was actually saying, well, if I'm the building manager, if I'm the facilities manager, I now know which boardrooms are more in use, which ones are more popular, for right, which reason, right? But it might be closer to the elevator or whatever, actually. And if I was charging for that, then I would charge them appropriately based on use right, and demand, right? So exactly, you know, there's so many different ways that you can use this, and I think that's the crucial thing that people misunderstand sometimes about IoT, is it is simply the plumbing to enable other services and other benefits to come from it. Such as the billing, and that's a fantastic example around the billing. You know, you don't have to roll out the truck. I mean, think about what you've saved in labor from that, and other elements. Right. It's really quite special, actually, and that's why, you know, it certainly does go on much further than just a factory, and almost right, really limitless, I would say, Ross, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, what we see is, I would make two comments on that. Like another example, think of a circuit breaker, right? Something is what would seem as mundane as a circuit breaker. If you think of an airport, you may have thousands of circuit breakers in an airport, and a light goes out somewhere, and maintenance gets a call that, hey, there's a light out somewhere. You have to go figure out which panel that circuit breaker is in, send somebody to the panel, figure out which of the, you know, numerous circuit breakers there is the right one and reset it. So there's a use case where those circuit breakers are becoming connected. And again, sort of that most in front of your face application is the identifying the circuit that's tripped. But once you make these circuit breakers smart, you can do other things with them. You can look at like, what's the total power consumption on that branch of the circuit? Or you can start to even do more like predictive maintenance things. If you're looking at the voltage and current through this breaker and you see something odd, now you can say, hey, there's something strange going on in this circuit. Get an electrician out there before you get a short circuit or something like that. So again, it's that theme of, you know, the IoT is the plumbing. And, you know, part of what we have to do is make that plumbing very easy to install and super reliable. But sort of once you have that, you know, once you have that connectivity, then the use cases are almost limitless. And, you know, identifying the data you can collect and then what sort of insights or business models you want to build on top of that data become incredibly powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I was just thinking then when you were talking about the circuit and stress testing it, you know, if we use a coalition of different technologies such as digital twin, you might be able to identify it in its twin before it actually went into action, right? So you've got these two elements, you know, both controlling it. But no, I think it's so impressive actually, and I think, you know, one of the things that our viewers have commented on in the past actually is where you've kind of got that eye-opening moment where this can be used in so many different contexts and so many different businesses. And I think hopefully what we're trying to do here on the podcast and within this podcast in particular is dispelling that myth to say, well, actually, look, IoT isn't this esoteric kind of niche thing. It's everywhere, but it also can... it can be relevant in your business and your area if you can see the value of it and if you can understand what it can mean beyond just to place a place in the sensor. So I think it's some fantastic examples, you know, and obviously Silicon Labs is doing incredibly well off the back of that, you know, as it stands, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, we identified this as a market we wanted to be in back before it was even called IoT. But, you know, our belief was that we will talk a lot about the IoT edge. And, you know, IoT is a term that's become so broad, it's almost meaningless. I mean, you could say anything is IoT. But when I think about it, where we focus is really on these smart connected edge devices. And there's a lot of unique challenges when you look at those devices. So as an example, your occupancy sensor you mentioned that we talked about earlier that, you know, is can be maddening if it's just based on motion. That may be battery powered because you may have retrofit that sensor into a room. And when you start talking about hundreds or thousands of these devices, you can't be changing batteries every 6 months. You know, you need a really long duration of battery life, or you need to harvest energy from somewhere. So you never have to replace that battery. But, you know, there's different technology challenges when you're talking about these edge devices. You typically don't have a lot of power. You typically don't have a lot of money you can spend. You can't have a $1,000 occupancy sensor. So there are all these constraints that really force some challenging technical problems that we have to go solve of how do you make it low power? How do you make it low cost? How do you make it ultra reliable? And how do you fit it into, you know, a form factor that maybe is, you know, the size of a postage stamp or, you know, or even smaller. So those edge node devices are going to really be the sea of data that's going to get fed into these networks. And, you know, that's really where we live predominantly are on those edge node devices.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a few things there, Ross, about where this is all going and the impact of this in the future of AI on industrial IoT. But for me, one of the things that I'm always fascinated about is energy harvesting. We've had Simon on from Nowy in the past, Dutch business focused around energy harvesting, and one of the main examples that we've seen previously is, you know, the good old-fashioned remote control, you know, for the TV. Actually, you're not needing to change the batteries in that anymore, using kinetic energy to charge it as you throw it around the room, you know. Right. But I think that the harvesting element is 100% accurate and on point for me, because it's that's going to be a limitation. The power and powering these devices, because the tech's right. already there, the sensor's there, the putting it down into a postage stamp size, as you said. So we need to make sure that all of these things work together in order right. to get in order to get to that point. So is that where you see it kind of going? So obviously at the edge, but do you see, you know, the energy harvesting element to this playing a kind of focal point on, you know, being able to do this at scale in the future as well?
Yeah, I think it, yes, I would say. It depends a lot on the application. So as an example, energy harvesting, we use a term like if it's dirty, difficult, or dangerous, energy harvesting becomes really attractive. Meaning if it's hard to get to that battery to change it, you know, if it's difficult, if it's in a hostile environment, if there's a lot of them, you know, if you're talking about a remote control, it's an annoyance to change the battery in your remote control. Imagine if you had 1,000 door sensors that were all battery powered in a hotel, and you have to go change batteries on those. That's a whole different scale of problem. So we see a lot of interest in energy harvesting. It's still a continuum, though, between customers who look at the economics and say, hey, the lifetime of my product may only be 7 years. And if I can get a coin cell battery that lasts for 7 years, that product is going to be refreshed when the battery dies. So it is just makes more economic sense for me to still be very, very energy efficient, but to use an ultra cheap coin cell battery, you know, versus I can't get a long battery life out of a traditional battery. I have a lot of devices. You know, now let me harvest energy, because there's a cost associated with harvesting in both the element that's going to harvest the energy, storing that energy. So it really depends. It's not a one size fits all, but low power, whether you harvest it or you get it from a battery, is super crucial in all of these applications when you're not tied to a power source.
Yeah. 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 It's something I haven't really, you know, considered that much. It's, what is the pain point right. at that particular area? Because as you say, I think that was a really good point. It's an annoyance actually to change the battery, but you know, it's a whole different quantum, isn't it? When you're talking about, you know, 5,000 door locks or something that you feasibly couldn't do. Right. The kind of constant with this is it has to be low power. It has yes. to, you know, it has to be, you know, obviously smart. It has to work in the way it's intended to work and be robust. But yeah, that's interesting. And I like the kind of the future of edge on this. And as we touched upon that earlier, and where, you know, AI and edge will come with IoT. I think, you know, at the moment we just have such a big kind of, I know everyone says this every decade, but I think a big coalition of, you know, generative AI, AI both at quantum level and IoT all right. merging at the same time. It's really an exciting time to be in this field, isn't it, Ross?
Yeah, it really is. And I think if you look at it, I think the large language models have gotten, you know, most of the press, rightly so, around AI. And truly impressive stuff happening in that part of the space. You know, when we think of the edge, though, there's some really exciting applications there, in my opinion, as well. So, you know, we were talking, going back to the occupancy sensor. Now, typically, those are based on a PIR sensor that detects motion. And what's great about them is they're reliable and they're relatively inexpensive. What's difficult about them is we've all had the experience of being in a conference room and you didn't move enough to trigger the sensor and the lights go off. So you have to wave your arms. we're working with companies now that are adding other sensors into that motion sensor to make them be more of an occupancy sensor. So that could be sound. That could be using the radio waves that that wireless sensor is using to communicate back to the cloud to actually be almost like a radar to map out the room. And if you start using sound, or even people are using video for mapping, like, are there people in the room? You don't want to necessarily send all that data up to the cloud, wait for it to get processed in an AI running on the cloud, and then come back down and say, somebody's in the room. If you can do that on the edge, it'll both be faster to respond, but also you can remove a lot of privacy concerns. So if you think about video, you don't necessarily want to, in every public space, or I certainly don't want to in every room of my house, have a camera that's feeding data to the cloud that, you know, we've all heard of the breaches of that kind of data. I think it's just not comfortable for a lot of consumers to do that. But we've shown with some of the AI acceleration we have in our devices, you could, in one of these low-cost devices, actually process the video at the edge and say, count the number of people that are in a room, and never send that data outside of that device to the cloud. So those edge applications are driving a lot of use cases, either because you need them to have a lower latency, you're concerned about privacy, you need them to happen fast, you might not have the ability to send all that data to the cloud. That's driving a lot of innovation at the edge.
Yeah, I think that was a really, you know, really well explained, actually. I think a lot of people saw, you know, Pete Warden's example a few months back, which he showed about speaking to the smart light and being able to process right. it, to turning on and off. But actually, that's not the concern. The concern is the sensitivity of the data going to the cloud, the speed at which it goes to the cloud, and whether right. whether or not you actually want that going. And you're entirely right and accurate. You know, I'm not going to name any names of some very large businesses. right. But do you really want that going to the cloud? You know, do you really want that, you know, in your house, you know, all the time? And I think that's where it becomes terribly personal as well, Ross. You know, everyone right. uses the example of saying, would you want it in your house? Right. And I think that's the kind of litmus test to say, I'm good with it or I'm not good with it. So I can totally see the benefit of it. And I'm excited to see where, you know, these kind of edge devices and, you know, advancements in tiny machine learning as well are going. You know, we've had Evgeny Gusev on the podcast in the past from Tiny ML Foundation. And it's really exciting. I think it'll be a really interesting time because, we seem to be going at a pace of knots at the moment, certainly with all of this.
Yeah. And if you think again about kind of those edge devices, there, our CTO does a really great presentation where he talks about the resources you have available. If you're a small IoT edge device, if you're a cell phone, and if you're a server, you know, if you think of like that continuum from the edge to the cloud, and you look at how much power you can afford, how much processing you have available, and how much bandwidth you have. You know, a occupancy sensor is most likely not going to be a 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi pipe with, you know, hundreds of megabits worth of bandwidth. It's probably going to be a really, really kind of small channel you can send data back over. And when you think about those constraints, it really forces you to do these things in a super efficient, intelligent way, because you have all these constraints you can't get around that are just natural there. But if you can find ways to unlock these types of features in that really constrained device, it becomes, you know, transformative in terms of what you can do at the edge.
And I think, do you know what? I think that's the theme for this whole episode for me, is the killer use case, as the phrase you used earlier. But actually, yeah. what can you unlock from doing it? Because I right. think sometimes you really need to think about that. And I think you've articulated this so well throughout this podcast about, you know, well, what is the benefit beyond yes. the tech to do that? What does it mean? And where can you monetize it from a business aspect? And why would the consumer want it? And I right. go and those are the questions. Can I make money yes. from it? And will someone want it? And I think yes. if you can answer that confidently, then I think you've got a winning product, haven't you?
Right. I think the connectivity aspect. So to be clear, I think doing this connectivity well, making it easy for customers to embed it into their products, making it robust and reliable, making sure that we have the features that the customers need, that's really a challenging problem. But our goal is to make it so that when a customer is thinking about adding IoT to their system, they shouldn't be thinking about, well, it's really hard to make the wireless work. They should be thinking about, what data do I want to collect? What business case am I building around that? What's the use case I want to solve? Versus, you know, should this be Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or Thread or Matter? That's our job, is to make sure that whichever technology is right for you, we make sure that it's easy to use, robust, reliable, all of those things. But once you make that decision, you know, I think then once you have that pipe, now it's on the customer to say, this is a use case that I can monetize. This is a use case that's worth collecting data to mine those insights. You know, I'll give you another example. We're in power tools. And if you think of professional power tools, like, why would you put IoT into a power tool? So there are manufacturers that are putting Bluetooth into their device. And like, one of the initial killer use cases was to prevent theft. So you get the tool out of the tool bin in the morning, the foreman comes over with their phone, the tool is inoperable until the foreman unlocks it. So if someone steals it, it's basically worthless as a tool. That was kind of the killer use case. But then when you look on top of that, they've started to do things with the tools, like, let's say there's a job where you're installing metal roofing and you have to put screws into the roofing. And if you over torque the screw, you're going to cause the roofing to kink and then you potentially have a leak. So when you set that tool up for the job, again, a foreman or a workman can say, okay, this is what I'm using the tool for now. And it will automatically set up the right torque profile so that you don't over tighten the screw. The other thing you can do is look at, well, how many screws did a workman install in an hour? Because you have this connectivity now and you can see, okay, they only put in 100 screws and I would have expected 500. You can try to understand productivity and things like that. So again, I find it fascinating that, you know, there's this one somewhat mundane use case of prevent the tool from being stolen that turns into this myriad of like business insight and kind of return on that investment that maybe you never even anticipated when you first built the system.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's impressive, isn't it? I always used to laugh when BLE was a thing and, you know, everyone was putting in toothbrushes and various other devices, and you kind of felt like it. Sometimes it was a little bit overkill. You know, do you really need to look at your phone to see if you're brushing your teeth right? Well, you know, because you're brushing your teeth. But from the power tool point of view, I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? To actually say, you know, this person hasn't done this for that reason. Like, have they got a problem? You know, is there some sort of RSI problem with their health, with their hand, or are they being lazy, or is there something there? And it's like, I think that for me is just so amazing how many different elements that can come off the back of what was the original benefit or the perceived original benefit. And I mentioned earlier this spider's web of different complementary things that you can do from this, which is incredible. Really, really is impressive. Really impressive.
Yeah. And I think, again, our job is to make that easy for customers to be able to focus on, this is the business outcomes. You know, and again, that's a really hard problem, to make all these technologies easy to use, to make them all robust and reliable, to allow them to work together, you know, to make it easy to add that into the system. You know, that's where we really focus. And that's kind of, I think, what our value add is to the customers, so they can focus on where their value add is. What do I do with the product? Not how do I get the product to talk to the cloud?
That's a really crucial point, because I think for a long time, the technologist and the business person have found it hard to talk. And you're right, because I think you used a phrase earlier, like, I don't care if it's BLE or I don't care if it's Wi-Fi or whatever. Like, actually, you should be tech agnostic. You don't really care what tech it is, provided it does what it needs to do. Because there's a variety of interfaces and there's a variety of ways in which we can get, you know, the hardware to talk to another piece of software somewhere. But that's down to you guys to work out and to deliver and for the customer to get the benefit from that and to great success from what you've said and from the many examples.
And I would just say the technology does matter in certain use cases. So if you think of that smart city use case, you need to cover an area that could be multiple kilometers, where you need these meters to be able to talk back to, let's say, a base station that could be a few kilometers away. Or the further away you can cover, the fewer base stations you need to put in, the lower your cost of ownership. You know, Bluetooth probably wouldn't be a good choice there. So we have these ultra long range technologies, Wi-Sun or sub-gig or these technologies that are much, much better for that type of use case. So, you know, in some cases, depending on what your deployment looks like, one technology would be better than the other. But, you know, our goal is to be agnostic. So we're not telling you the whole world has to be Bluetooth because all we have is Bluetooth, or the whole world has to be Wi-Fi. You know, we want to help you figure out what the best technology is and then make that technology easy for you to use.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agree. I mean, we've had a lot of people talking about, you know, LoRa in the past and why LoRa was so, impressive, because it worked for what it needed to do. And I completely agree with you, right? You know, in certain instances, it wouldn't be appropriate to use that, or it might be overkill, actually, which was with the kind of, which was the other aspect of this, where you probably don't need that to get that job done. But I think the phrase here is, provided it does what it needs to do at the right price point and is robust and scalable enough, then we're in a good place. Right. And that's clearly what you guys are famous for and have done really, really well with over the years.
Right. We think so.
Well, I mean, if other people could articulate it in Silicon Labs what you've done today, Ross, I'm sure you'll be in a very good place for many more years to come as well, actually. I really do genuinely mean that. Ross, it's been lovely having you on the podcast today. Honestly, we could talk for hours about so many different use cases and the spider's web, and how that can go out. But I've kind of come to the end of the show now, when I'm going to wrap up with a couple of quick questions. Got a question for every guest that comes on to the podcast, and it kind of changes to depending on the guest. But the question that we've got for you today, Ross, is, if you could solve any challenge that you've got in your day-to-day life that isn't currently solved by tech, what would that be and why? As weird and wonderful as you'd like.
Wow. Any challenge. How can I get myself into the gym more frequently? Maybe I would say is challenge number one. I think, you know, one of the things I find is... there was sort of a prompt, maybe what's an annoyance I see in tech as well. I find like having to have a unique app for every product use case, store I go to, you know, I have got literally like 200 apps on my phone. And, the fact that I have to open that one app to do this one thing, when I don't do it very often, that's super annoying to me. I wish there was some way to consolidate that down more. So I could have one kind of, the term that's used sometimes, pane of glass to go and see all these things together, instead of having to individually search through my phone to find that one app. That to me is pretty annoying.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I might have something to help you with your first query. So the smart gym, right? So the smart gym, right? If you went to the gym and you used an RFID and the machine knew that the last time you used that, you had a certain weight and it automatically changed to that weight, then maybe that would help you, right? We had someone on about smart gyms in the past, and I thought that was amazing. I thought that was such a great piece of tech.
I'll have to go watch that podcast.
And a couple of quick fire questions for you then, Ross. So one gadget that you can't live without.
I would say CarPlay in my vehicles.
Yeah, I feel you on that one, definitely. An app that's changed your life.
I'm a bit of a home automation nerd, and I recently adopted a new system that's called Home Assistant that is kind of a open source, but that allowed me to take my whole home automation system and kind of collapse it down into that one app. I've been really enjoying that. That's made a huge difference in my my home automation.
Ah, nice, nice. We had the guys from Control 4 on the podcast in the past as well. They were talking about some crazy things that they were doing.
Right.
Last question. Something that you're passionate about outside of work.
I like driving cars on the racetrack at high speed.
Oh, nice. What type of racetrack? NASCAR or?
Well, no, here in Austin, we have a Formula One track. So the Circuit of the Americas.
Yeah.
So I probably have, I don't know, a couple hundred, maybe 500 laps on the Circuit of the Americas in a couple of different cars. So I enjoy that immensely.
Nice. Yeah. So I've been to Silverstone quite a few times here.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So big fan of that. Yeah, big fan. So
you need to get out and drive on the track. Find an arrive and drive experience and get out and get on the track.
Okay. Well, if you ever get to Europe, you can go to the Nürburgring as well. You can just arrive and drive at the Nürburgring.
And that means I have to learn all 112 turns. I don't know.
It's pretty impressive, although very scary, actually, when you're on there, because you could be trundling along in whatever car and someone comes past you in a GT3 RS at, 200K, and it's pretty full on.
Yeah.
Ross, thank you so much for joining me on the IoT podcast show. I really, really appreciate it and enjoyed the conversation.
You bet, Tom. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.